From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is underway, an opportunity for a half hour of commentary and analysis and perhaps even some insight into the media issues of the week.
That's right, Rex.
There are many issues about which we could have insight.
About which we might. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union.
I just hope that you guys will be thoughtful and analytical this time as opposed to, you know, the knee-jerk, anything that the newspapers ever do is right. And
he's Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, with his usual insightful
clickbait
commentary. Yes, absolutely. And Caitlin Brown, the professor of communication at the College of St. Rose. Wonderful to see you all. We have some mail from listeners, but first I have to read some words from Meryl Streep.
Oh, boy.
The great actress Meryl Streep, perhaps the greatest actress of our generation.
I think
she is. Who is about to play Katharine Graham, one of my heroes, for a new movie that's coming out called The Post.
I'm so excited
for this movie. Yeah. On the Pentagon Papers.
Oh, she'll be great. Yeah. Only problem being, of course, that that movie glorifies The Post, and actually the New York Times was very powerful in publishing the Pentagon Papers. It somewhat takes issue with the facts, but anyway. That aside,
she lives in this area, by the way, and in our listening area. Oh, yes. And it's been very nice. She's a lovely lady.
You know, at the Golden Globe Awards in January, she talked about the Committee to Protect Journalists, which is this international organization that really stands up for imperiled journalists around the world. And there's always a fancy dinner. I've been to this thing before as the guest of My Nice Corporation. And they did this at the Grand Hyatt in Washington.
Right.
Gorgeous hotel, ballroom. And she surprised the organization at their dinner last night as we speak and appeared. And everybody's cheering. Here's Meryl Streep. And here's what she said. And this, Alan, you're going to say this is self-serving. However, here's what she said.
I would never say that about her. I love her.
She said, thank you. No, I'm self-serving of me to write it.
Oh, self-serving of you.
Thank you, she said. You intrepid, underpaid, overextended, trolled and unextolled, young and old, battered and bold, bought and sold, hyper-alert, crack caffeine fiends. You're ambitious, contrarian, fiery, dogged, and determined BS detectives. You are the enemy of the people, just the bad people. And I, on behalf of a grateful nation, thank you.
And I remember when she did it because she got, remember that there were those of us who were out front on the Trump stuff pretty early. And then there were the people who, it's almost universal these days, there. And she was an original gutsy lady when she took him on that way. She was.
Well, I'm grateful to her for recognizing the value of journalism and to saying it out loud and to take time to do that.
Absolutely. So much to talk about. Down in Alabama, you know, where there's this controversy about the U.S. Senate candidate Roy Moore, the newspapers are really standing up to him. It's an amazing thing. Alabama's largest newspaper, the Birmingham News, published a scathing editorial calling for the Republicans to withdraw its official support. And this is kind of extraordinary because in Alabama, you know, this is a bold thing to do for a local newspaper. And now they're threatening to sue. That is, the Moore people are threatening to sue the newspaper.
Well, not only that, but the last of the U.S. senators, he'll be the senior senator, came out fully against Moore. The establishment doesn't like him, so the newspaper, I suspect the newspaper could probably be called part of the establishment also.
And the reporters who have uncovered this are from the Washington Post, and it's very thoughtful reporting, such detailed work that they've done. With the names of all the women, you know, this is not a sources said kind of thing. This is deeply reported. And what is happening is dangerous to the reporters. Mr. Moore's wife, in defense of her husband, is posting one of the reporters' personal cell phone numbers on her Facebook page. She's posting one of the reporters' resumes, which included the home address, so that people can report any interaction they're having with reporters. They're trying to delegitimize the reporting, of course.
You bet. And this is very Trumpian. I mean, this is exactly the kind of thing the president would be doing right now.
Well, hopefully audiences will recognize what the wife is doing. And if they do any outreach to the reporters, it would be to congratulate them on their good work. The Birmingham News did an excellent job in following up on the original reporting. And they went to confirm, as a good newspaper organization would do, they went to confirm all of the original reporting by the Post. And then in their editorial, not only called for the legislature to step down and to not support Moore, but they said whether they do it or not, voters need to back off. This is the time. It's now.
You know, Professor, I hope you don't take this the wrong way, but that is so goody-two-shoes of you, you know, this business of the good people of Alabama. The good people of Alabama will do what the newspaper tells them. I got news for you. Forget that, Jack. That ain't going to happen. Those people down there, this is still one of the closest races. And one of the things that the newspapers are reporting, because this is the Media Project, is that in the polls, there's 10% of people who won't tell you how they're going to vote.
Hmm.
And I know this is a bad thing to say, but I think some of those people and their forebears may have been under white sheets at one point or another. So those 10% negatives, I think there's a very good chance he's going to win.
But we know polling has been wrong before very recently.
So this comes in the context of all this discussion, of course, that's roiling the country about sexual harassment involving news industry figures as well as those in show business and in politics, a huge issue. One of the questions, and Kaylin, maybe I'll ask you first, since you're the only woman in the room, would part of the solution to the sexual harassment epidemic be to put more women in newsroom leadership positions, do you think?
I think that would certainly help in newsrooms. I think that women are more likely to identify issues if they arise, and they will be more sensitive, perhaps, to issues concerning women. I remembered this after our last meeting. I was about 8 months pregnant working on the city desk at the Times Union when a Rochester story came up in which pregnant women were miscarrying because of some terrible illness. There was some sort of virus, and the result was miscarriage. And an editor at the city desk asked me, 8 months pregnant, to follow and localize this story. And I kept thinking, it cannot be, under no circumstance can this be malicious. It has to be a lack of sensitivity. And I thought that if that person had been sensitive, they may not have chosen the most pregnant person in the room, maybe the only one. Although actually there were five of us at the time.
Whoa.
But yeah, Winnie and Julie Carr, it went on and on, but you know, and Michelle Morgan. But that was probably not the most sensitive choice. And I think if a female editor had looked around the newsroom and saw that they wanted to localize that story that was jeopardizing pregnancies, that perhaps they might have chosen someone who wasn't pregnant.
I know I shouldn't go here, but I'm going to try as sensitively as I can. I mean, wouldn't it make sense to bring it to the person who is closest to it? I mean, Rex, for example, let me just finish on that one. Rex has often said that he wants somebody of color to be able to go into a black community because they will have an understanding that a white reporter might not. So with the risk of offending you, I just raise that as a possibility of why that person might have assigned you to it, man or woman.
I am certain that was not the reason. There would have been a framing there had it been, I think you're the best person, what do you think? It wasn't that sort of directive. Mm-hmm. It wasn't an inquiry, are you comfortable?
Hey, you over in the corner, is that the kind of thing you
well, actually, far end, I was at the door, the seat nearest the door.
Right.
I can totally visualize
first
my
first one
chair.
Out the door, I can too, I remember that. You know, Margaret Sullivan, the excellent media writer for the Washington Post, former editor of the Buffalo News and New York Times, public editor she was called, she has an interesting point about this notion of problem in newsrooms, in news organizations themselves, of sexual harassment. She says, look, when in the wake of flawed reporting on weapons of mass destruction, newspapers more closely regulated the use of anonymous sources because the WMD's reporting was based on anonymous sources and it was bad. And she says, when journalists miss political, social discontent that fueled Trump's election, newsrooms refocused coverage on underreported issues and underreported populations. So she says, why should dealing with sexual harassment be any different? Shouldn't there be an aggressive effort by the news media now to do something to put in place structures that will give us better protection against sexual harassment in our own ranks? And might that be elevating women to positions of leadership?
At the same time, though, with that question of elevating women to the position of leadership, which I think is a good thing, providing they are as qualified or more qualified than another candidate, I think it's very important that qualifications speak to who gets placed where.
Well, let's go back then to Rex's idea that you should have more people of color going into communities of color. So, Rex, the question to you would be, yeah, where's the trade-off? I think, Kaylin, you're exactly right. You might have somebody who might have graduated from Yale, you know, summa cum laude, who is white, versus the person who really did understand that community. It's a tough one, isn't it?
Well, I remember, as I mentioned several shows ago, that when the Hearst Corporation sent a number of us out to San Francisco to the Examiner for a week to work on diversity training, there was a reporter there by the name of Steve Chen who wrote for the San Francisco Examiner, and he was Asian, and he was tasked with covering the Asian community. And we had a very long and intense discussion about the value of that. And he absolutely had inroads with that community, and he recognized that, and the paper recognized that it was valuable for Steve to be covering that community.
But in this case, in that case, you had a very bright guy, so the trade-off wasn't that great. But what about, to put it frankly, the summa cum laude white guy from Yale versus a guy who grew up in a community, he's bright, but he's not the top of the, you know, of the academic ladder. And I would wonder what Rex would do in a case like that.
It's a qualification issue that is, in as I've said here before, sometimes gender, race, age, economic status, sometimes those are qualifying greater than, let's say, writing capacity or that summa cum laude from Yale thing. That is great academic achievement or great writing skills. We don't necessarily need to look at those as being the greatest qualifications needed when you need diversity in your newsroom.
Absolutely.
Sometimes
that's
there.
Let me raise something else with you guys. Okay, so we have a program in the mornings, which Rex's associate editor, Mike, is on quite a bit, and which we discuss all kinds of issues. And Trump, this, that, and everybody yells at everybody else, and it's all fun. However, when it came to sexual harassment issue and any kind of, but shouldn't there be good reporting in that you find out who the people are who are making the complaints and the rest of this stuff, there was hell to pay. I mean, hell to pay. I never got so much mail in my whole life about, I didn't really say anything negative, but, you know, the whole idea that there are some subjects which people are so inflamed by, and I mean on the feminist side of this, that you say to yourself, hey, this may not be worth it. This may be an off-limits conversation because, you know, who needs it? Now, I ask you both as editors, former editors, and people who know this stuff very well, are there ever times that you see something where it's time to back off?
That is because the issue is so controversial that
your readership says, I'll never read the Times Union again as long as I live.
I think you're aware of what your readership is looking for and you think about their interests. But if you have an important issue that needs to be reported, you have to do it notwithstanding that kind of criticism. We've just done some investigative reporting about the mayor of Cohoes, one of the communities in our midst, and we're rather relentless about it. We've done some stories. We did an editorial on it. The people of Cohoes, we've gotten a lot of pushback from his political pals. We get a lot of pushback about President Trump, you know, because we report about him, as you do. But, you know, if you really believe that the journalism you're doing is important, you just have to kind of let the chips fall where they may, don't you? I think you agree with that.
Well, I do agree with that, but I'm just wondering from both of you who have been there and have been in editorial positions and know that. Let me give you an example. One of my favorites is that the Berkshire Eagle in Pittsfield, the award-winning, Pulitzer-winning, I always set Rex up, and then it was, yes, in 1954.
It was a great effort.
Okay, sure. But I always say, so I always tell the story because it's very interesting. When the museum, and it's become a nationwide story, tried to sell
the Berkshire Museum wants to deaccession some of their art and change their mission. Right.
Right. You're so good at that, including the Rockwells.
Right.
And Norman gave them the paintings as a community effort. Now they want to sell them for millions and millions of dollars.
And the Eagle is continuing to report this.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, indeed. The Eagle's taken the lead.
Very thoughtfully. Mm-hmm.
I believe that their investigative reporter, Larry Parnes, deserves a Pulitzer for the work he's done. He's gone down to where the boss who wanted to do this, Van Shields, used to work. And he did the same kind of thing, and it's really been an excellent thing. But as soon as the museum said they were going to do it, the Berkshire Eagle ran an editorial, lead editorial, saying this is a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Well, They basically have taken it back over this time.
So they changed their mind.
I think they did, and I give them great credit for
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Everyone is entitled to do that.
Yeah. You know,
interesting. Sign of growth.
I don't know how or who got before them and made this argument that this was the thing to do, but they had the guts. Unlike the museum board of trustees, who by now has inflamed their community so badly that they don't change. They're sticking with it.
Well, they believe they're doing the right thing. That's their job as trustees. If they believe they need to change their mission, they're the trustees of the museum. They have a right to do that. So, you know, I think it's interesting.
As my mom would say, Rex, I see.
Yeah. I mean, I know you disagree, but I don't know how. I think most museum professionals would say that the museums ought to have the right to make decisions about their own mission.
Let me just respond to that and say, wrong. From all over the United States are coming the major organizations, museum organizations, everybody else saying this is the wrong thing to do.
Could be.
And we know this because of the good journalism that's following all of it.
Absolutely. Let's hear it from Berkshire
Eagle. I told you about defending them no matter what.
So on to just another topic, because we did have some mail that I mentioned to you. We had two people who wrote, Andy, I don't know where Andy is from, and Jim from Warwick, Massachusetts, who were upset about our reporting in this show on experts who said that we do not, indeed, that it would be wrong for the news media to not name shooters in mass homicides. Uh-huh. Remember we quoted people from that, and here Andy says, I have to call BS on your denial that naming mass shooters has no effect on the number of future mass shootings. It certainly isn't the only factor, but a significant factor. He goes on, I don't see his scientific underpinning of it. I don't see his research.
Well, but his position may be that by naming them, you give them ego gratification, and that encourages others who want their names out there to do the same thing, right?
And provide demographic information about the shooter, white, divorced, Christian male, but leave out the name and photograph. So please, media should treat mass shooters the way they treat rape victims. No name, no photographs. Jim in Warwick says the panel's response seems to be that the public needed to get all the information it could about the shooter. Withholding the information would be irresponsible reporting. Providing all that information about the shooter only enhances that person in the eyes of those who hear and read about him. Providing more information, in my view, elevates the person to levels of recognition that inspire others to follow. Is there any research to support that point of view?
I would say that when you look at the stories most recently on one of the most recent mass shooters, that there was information in that story about the individual tormenting animals. That is valuable information for the public to know. And I don't think that elevates remotely the person who did the shooting. I think it provides an insight into, oh, there is proof and there is research that demonstrates that people who torture animals may elevate to another level of violence. So,
you know, I just have this is going to sound a little bit callous, but there is a level of our work at which you can't make the consequence of your reporting be the governing factor. Our job is to be truth tellers, not to be community soothers. In some instances, you try to minimize harm. That's one of the precepts of the Code of Ethics of the Society of Professional Journalists. But our job is not to cover up information in order to try to avoid what may be the outfall of it. You know, politicians want us to do this all the time. They want us not to report stuff because it will damage their cause or something, or damage something they think is important. Oh, if you write about that stuff, it's only going to make people unhappy. If you write about the condition of the streets in Albany, it will only discourage people from wanting to come to Albany. So why do you write that bad news?
And why do you, Alan, talk about thugs and prostitutes walking in front of your building at 4 o'clock in the morning? Because the same thing, that will discourage people from thinking well of Albany. But I want to go back to something else that you guys just said and you just passed over. You have made a decision, I think it's an appropriate one, not to name rape victims.
You know, when Rosemary Armijo was on this show, she did not think so.
She's
a very experienced journalist who thinks that that is an anachronism and we should go ahead and not treat rape differently from any other crime, because keeping their name out of the papers suggests that there's something shameful about being a crime victim.
And she makes a good argument there, but I would side with the individuals who believe that we should keep names out. It's complicated. It's involved. There's a lot of psychological studies that show that it does more damage and compounds the problem that happened, the violent attack on the woman. If we repeat that, that puts them through that again, and it stigmatizes the person, because there is still stigma around rape and sexual assault, even
okay,
though
then.
There should no longer be.
Okay, then what about mental illness? In other words, there are those people who think we should never name somebody who is mentally ill who may have done a crime, for example, and that stigmatizes them also.
Well, that raises a question about all these shooters. There's an argument about whether they're mentally healthy or mentally ill. And from my perspective, each is mentally ill.
Right.
That you would take a gun and go murder people signifies mental illness. I know we'll get pushed back on this.
We do. But, and I say that all the time.
But, well, we all have levels of mental illness. It's just a case of whether we're, I mean, it's just so true.
So
yourself,
perspective,
right?
Perspective.
Exactly.
And, I mean, yes.
let's be realistic here. But I mean, I think that the rape victim question, Alan, is an interesting one because there we do try to follow that precept to minimize harm because there is no great value to society, to no need of the readership to know who the rape victim is. Is there?
Well, but let me fight back on that one. The Brits, as I understand it, and you know much more about this, Rex, being a man of the world than I am, but I think the Brits are very careful about naming suspects before trial.
By law.
By law. Yeah, mm-hmm. they can't do that. And yet we do that all the time, prejudicing. And you know what happens is the defense always reaches out to you and to us and says, send us any tapes you have or any stories you have because we're going to prove that this guy can't get a fair trial as a result of this. Right? I mean, I happen to think that the British way is the admirable way to do it.
To not name anyone accused of a crime until it's been adjudicated.
Well, it's a fairer way. I mean, Rex himself, and I never want to use the word pomposity.
However,
every time I've been here, I've heard that word.
But Rex is always talking about do no harm.
And not do no harm, minimize harm, do as little harm.
We're not doctors.
Right. We know that our work will harm people sometimes.
Right. We can anticipate when we broadcast or publish a story that there may be harm, but we cannot anticipate all the individuals we may alienate in the course of talking about it, like our own listeners who are criticizing our take on naming or not naming shooters. I mean, we have a position on that. Different people have different positions on it, but there's not always going to be agreement. And you know when you utter a word that there will be pushback.
Yes, that's true. But on the other hand, let me give you a perfect example of this. A person is accused of being a rapist, and we publish his name in the paper. And then what happens is, let's just say in some cases, not all cases, of course, but some cases they get off.
Mm-hmm.
And then old ladies and young men and old men, I said that just to protect myself here, are now saying, there goes the rapist.
Well, you know, it's not just that. It's a lot of other cases. We are increasingly getting requests from people to take down stories from our digital archives because they are embarrassed. I had a high school principal from Long Island who had been arrested 15 years ago in Albany following the Grateful Dead. He was selling pot on the streets, and Albany police at the time did a sweep and arrested lots of people, and the Times Union put a whole lot of names in the paper of these people arrested for selling pot in the streets of Albany. That was probably more years ago than that. Anyway, he was embarrassed because his students now at the high school are saying, look at the principal. Here's his name. You know, there are good arguments that sometimes we will never remove something from our archives. But on occasion, when a case has been closed and when there is an issue of unfairness, apparently, we will basically block it from web crawlers so that it isn't found easily by people just Googling a name.
Well, I know we're out of time, but I have to say really quickly, Rex, that we see judicial cases in local courts in which they say, stay out of trouble and your file will be removed, but it's always going to be in your digital, in your digital release.
It's always going to be there. And there's a legal push to try to, by law, require that these things be pulled down. And that's an invasion of First Amendment freedom. So anyway, more on that to come. Sorry, folks, for having to leave. It's The Media Project. Kaylin Brown and Alan Shartok and Rex Smith, thank you for joining us. See you next week.
And no matter what wrong thing you guys do, you'll always come back and say, even if it's wrong, it's a First Amendment freedom. We can't fool with that.
Okay. The last word.
Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild. Got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill. All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok is CEO of WAMC, Professor Emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. And Kaylin Brown is the chair of the Department of Communications at the College of St. Rose. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.